In re Trust of Massey, Mr. Catlett, good morning to you, and Mr. Ruby, good morning to you. Do either council have any questions before we begin?
No, no.
Mr. Catlett, you may approach and you may proceed.
Thank you. My name is, I'd like to reserve 2 minutes for rebuttal. Morning. My name is Matt Catlett. I represent the appellants in this matter, Mark Massick and Diane Yahiro. This arises from a trust proceeding in the County Court of Gage County. Briefly, the facts are a joint petition is filed by two contingent beneficiaries of a trust, Barry and Colleen, seeking an accounting by the trustee, their mother, Patricia. Months later, a motion to amend this petition is filed, but only by Barry. This motion is granted. Barry files then an amended petition, which now alleges that two co-contingent beneficiaries, Mark and Diane, removed Patricia as trustee, blocked access to Patricia and the, quote, records of the trust, amended the trust and appointed one or more of themselves as trustee, and, quote, utilized the trust for themselves, misappropriated assets of the trust, and otherwise disposed of assets of the trust contrary to the terms of the trust. In this amended petition, Barry seeks damages against Mark and Diane. A trial is held, but without Mark and Diane, and following this trial, the county court renders a judgment of $1.2 million personally against Mark and Diane jointly and severally, as well as attorney fees. However, in its order, the county court finds that, quote, there was no evidence that there had been any improper substitution of trustees, that, quote, there was no evidence presented that the trust had been improperly amended, unquote. Less than 10 days later, Mark and Diane, through counsel, file a, quote, joint or a special appearance and motion for a new trial, asserting, among other things, lack of personal jurisdiction, insufficient process, and insufficient service of process. County court overrules this and Mark and Diane appeal. Mark and Diane assigned the following errors by the county court. Judgment is void because Patricia, as trustee, was an indispensable party but was not served and did not voluntarily appear. Process and service of process were insufficient as it relates to Mark and Diane. 3, the county court lacked personal jurisdiction over Mark and Diane. The next is the county court lacked subject matter over the amended petition because Colleen did not sign it. Next, the county court's judgment is contradicted by its own finding that there was no evidence of improper substitution of trustees and no evidence that the trust had been improperly amended. Next, the county court erred in entering judgment in favor of, quote, Barry Massick as guardian and conservator for Patricia Massick, trustee and beneficiary of the Charles and Patricia Massick Family Trust, unquote, because it is the trust itself that would be entitled to the judgment. And finally, the county court's judgment was not sustained by any evidence because there was no evidence that the, quote, assets, unquote, were, quote, misappropriated, were actually trust assets. And this is, in effect, a subject matter jurisdiction issue as well because at the trial, Barry offered into evidence two documents, the trust, the original trust document, and then this amended trust document. It's fundamental that in the law of trusts, in order for a valid trust to be created, the property has to be described or there has to be some mechanism for the definite, to definitely ascertain what the trust property is. And in this particular case, that does not exist. As it relates to the indispensable party issue, I mean, there isn't any question. Patricia was not served and did not voluntarily appear. Regardless of whether Barry's pleading is characterized as one brought under the code, the trust code, to remedy a breach of the trust by Mark and Diane under some theory that they were trustees or a civil complaint.
Was Barry the guardian of Patricia?
Well, there was evidence that was offered at the trial that he had been appointed as a temporary guardian, I don't know, in March of 2020 or something like that, and that appointment lasted for 60 days, I can't remember. But there was no, it lasted, I think it was March 6th, and it was effective for 60 days, so that would have taken us to May 6th of 2020. He filed his amended petition on June 24th, 2020. There's no evidence that he was her guardian and conservator at that time.
At some point in time, he became the permanent guardian.
In July, and there's evidence that he offered that he was appointed as her perpetual guardian and conservator on July 2nd.
When was the trial in this matter?
I'm sorry?
When was the trial?
I believe it was in September. It was sometime in September.
Time of the trial, he was the guardian?
I don't know. All I know is that he offered into evidence a document showing that he had been appointed by the Illinois court as Patricia's perpetual guardian. I don't know whether that was in effect at that time. I just know that that's what he offered. My clients were not there, of course. So, look, the issue of whether Patricia Berry was Patricia's guardian and conservator is irrelevant to the issue of service upon her. I mean, the statute, Nebraska Revised Statute Section 25-548.01, is instructive.
This trust had been registered in Nebraska, is that correct?
It appears to have been registered, yes, like 20 years ago.
What impact, if any, does that have on the proceedings here?
Nothing. The statute does provide that where a trust is registered, the trustee submits personally to the jurisdiction of the court regarding future trust proceedings. But this was this was a suit essentially against Mark and Diane under some theory that they were de facto trustees or whatever, not that they were the actual trustee. So Mark and Diane, as co-contingent beneficiaries under this trust, are not submitting personally to the jurisdiction of the court. Just because Berry files a complaint or a petition alleging that they've acted as trustees, that would result in chaos. Bottom line, clearly Patricia is an indispensable party. The case, I don't think Nebraska appellate courts have ever addressed this particular issue, but multiple courts that have addressed the issue have found that the trustee is an indispensable party to any proceeding relating to the trust, and she was not served. She did not voluntarily appear. That she may have been a ward of Berry at any time relevant is not relevant at all, because even the ward is required to be served. I mean, at 25-548, if the person to be served is incapacitated for whom a guardian, conservator or guardian has been appointed or confined, notice of service shall be given to the conservator or guardian or superintendent or similar official. Failure to give such notice does not affect the validity of service on the incapacitated person. I mean, you still have to serve her, even in a proceeding for the termination of a guardianship. The ward would still have to be served with that. So the fact that he was her guardian and conservator is not relevant to the issue of service. I'm already into my rebuttal. I want to address.
You mentioned de facto trustees a minute ago.
Yeah.
Is there such a concept? Is this state ever?
It's never been addressed in this state. It's never been recognized as a valid, cause of action, at least in Nebraska.
Have other courts recognized the theory?
There are, and I didn't address them in my brief. Doesn't really help me to address them in my brief, but yes, there are holdings from other jurisdictions that have recognized this concept of a de facto trustee. However, in the de facto trustee settings, there still has to be a requirement that the trustee breached. In other words, in a true de facto setting, what the person is alleging is that there is a third party that participated in a breach of the trust by the trustee. There is no allegation here that Patricia breached the trust. So that's why not even the de facto trustee really holds any water in this case. We contend that process and service of process were insufficient. A summons was required. because this was at best a civil complaint for conversion of trust assets. And assuming that Barry, as a beneficiary, even had standing to bring such an action, that summons was required, and that even if for some reason summons was not required, there would still have had to have been publication of notice of the hearing. There was no evidence of publication. And I'm 17 seconds here. We think that the burden to show, there was no trust shown, and this relates, to, I guess, to the sufficiency of the evidence as well as to subject matter jurisdiction. His own evidence shows that there is no trust in this particular case. I'm out of time. Does the court have any questions?
Thank you very much. Mr. Rubin, good morning to you. You may proceed.
Chief Justice, Justices, may it please the court. My name is Doug Ruge. I'm here on behalf of the appellee. I won't belabor the facts of this particular case. I think it's important to mention a few points.
Well, do you have these folks in your, were these folks in the court? Did they have an opportunity? Were they served, or did they have notice of these proceedings?
Yeah, I think that there's no evidence to dispute that they had actual notice of this hearing. The only evidence is that they actually had notice of this hearing. Further, they had notice of the proceedings. There's no question.
And did the court have jurisdiction?
Clearly, they had subject matter jurisdiction because the trust was registered. And they had personal jurisdiction. I think they had actual notice of the hearing. I don't think there's any. The evidence only shows that. They presented no evidence that they did not have notice of the hearing. They do state that they didn't have copies of the pleadings. They present evidence of that. But their attorney at the time, in an unrelated matter, a related matter, I should say, said that he was basically instructed not to do anything with respect to the hearing.
Where does that leave us?
I think it shows that they had notice of the hearing, okay? And they did nothing to, challenge jurisdiction until they filed the motion for a new trial.
Is this correct that Patricia was not served?
I don't think there's any evidence in the record that she was served. However, I think the evidence shows that Barry was the guardian and conservator at the time and appeared at the hearing.
And what's your legal position then? If there's a effective guardianship, conservatorship, or something to protect a person, the protected person need not be served? Is that your proposition?
I don't think under Nebraska law there's any requirement that the protected party be served. If it was for an appointment of a guardian conservator, that would be different. But he's already been appointed guardian and conservator. So I don't think there's any requirement that he separately serve her before appearing on her behalf at this hearing. Okay.
This wasn't filed on her behalf. It was filed by him in his individual capacity. Is that correct?
That's true.
So when he comes to trial, then it's your contention that he was representing Patricia as the guardian.
Well, that's the way the court entered the order.
Correct.
I suppose there's a couple of ways of looking at it. He, filed this petition in this individual capacity. The pleadings do reference that he is guardian and conservator. It's an interesting question as to whether a beneficiary could, ask that a judgment be entered on behalf of the trustee. That's in fact what the court did.
So what is this court supposed to do with that?
Well, I think it's important to note that they do not, they do not assign as error and argue that it was improper to award a judgment against a trustee. Okay, they argue that it, you know, that it, the judgment should have been awarded in favor of the trust, which I think has no basis. You know, it has to be awarded against the trustee, if anybody, not just an abstract trust. But they don't assign as error the fact that a judgment was awarded in favor of the trustee, and they don't argue that. So I think that's very important here. But yes, I thought about this too. You know, has the court affected the trial court effectively, you know, modified the pleadings by its ruling? That might be a consideration. I don't know
where would that leave you if it were error for the court to modify the pleadings.
So if it was error to modify the pleadings and just rule contrary to the pleadings, again, I would fall back on the fact that is not alleged as error or argued. So it's not before the court.
Is there an assignment of error that addresses the, what I'll call the judgment? The judgment is improper. Does that encompass any of this?
Well, they do argue that the judgment was inconsistent, but I don't think any of the assignment of error there and the argument relates to what we're talking about here. That they don't argue, and it doesn't appear from their argument that they're stating that it was improper to award a judgment against the trustee because the pleadings did not, you know, weren't brought by the trustee. That's not assigned as error, and it's not argued at all. So I don't think it's before the court. So
ultimately, there appears to be a judgment against Diane and Mark. Is that correct?
That's correct.
And how do they get into this?
Well, they are the contingent beneficiaries under the terms of the trust and alternate trustees under the terms of the trust.
Alternate trustees, but were they actually trustees during these alleged misappropriations?
Right. The court, as you probably know, found that there was no improper substitution of trustee. There was some concern about that.
No formal substitution.
I'm sorry?
There was no formal substitution of trustee.
Correct. Right. I don't think that there was any evidence before the court that there was a formal substitution of trustee.
But your contention is that they acted as trustees to manipulate the assets of the trust to their own benefit without authority.
Right, that's one of the arguments I make.
So is there such a thing as a de facto trustee?
I think other courts have clearly established that, and typically in those cases they're beneficiaries that run amok, kind of like this particular case. If you exercise control over, you know, the trust assets, even though you don't have authority to do that.
So are you asking this court to recognize the concept of a de facto trustee or trustees?
That would be consistent with other courts. And I think it's a concept that is very legitimate. I mean, if you're in fact acting as a trustee, you should be treated as a trustee, especially in cases like this where there's undisputed evidence of incompetence, where the trustee can't protect herself. Yes.
So tell us about that evidence a little bit.
Well, you have the guardian and conservatorship that's established, for one, and it's undisputed. The evidence is undisputed. He presented his current status as guardian and conservator at the time of the hearing.
What about the evidence? What evidence is there of abuse by Diane and Mark of Patricia and/or the trust?
So Barry, you know, they talks about how she was failing in her mental capacities. She could no longer care for herself and her autistic son who lived with her, and how Mark and Diane, therefore, unbeknownst to Barry at the time, take her to Chicago to live with Diane Yahiro. How she was unable to take care of her affairs at that time. How he details how he worked with the financial people in Chicago to find out how these trust funds were diverted by Mark and Diane to themselves.
How does that occur? What authority did they have to transfer funds? Did they forge their evidence that they forged Patricia's name? Did they show a power of attorney? What is there evidence of how they siphoned off these funds to their own personal use?
Yes, there was testimony about how they would bring her into these financial institutions to withdraw money. There was evidence about checks that were endorsed, I will grant you, that they were endorsed in some cases by what appeared to be Patricia's signature. But again, I think the evidence is undisputed that, and I'm beyond my time, that she was incapacitated at the time. She was unable to take care of her own affairs. And they present no evidence to the contrary, even though they submitted affidavits to the court. Anything further, Your Honor? No. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Do we have any time for rebuttal?
No, Your Honor.
There is no time for rebuttal. Counsel, thank you for your participation in In Re Trust of Massac. The court will go on.